Hello and welcome to the Let's Get Men Talking podcast, where our aim is to change the narrative surrounding masculinity and men's mental health by getting men talking. You can find us at letsgetmentalking.com, on Instagram at letsgetmentalking, on Twitter at letsgetmental_, and on LinkedIn for corporate inquiries. This episode is sponsored by Plight Club, a clothing brand that exists to inspire and empower people to talk about how they feel, and their aim is to connect the world on a deeper level. Check out their apparel at plightclub.co.uk. Today, we are talking to Ben Lombard, an HCPC registered physiotherapist who focuses on injury prevention, postural rehabilitation, spinal and sports injury. You can find him on Instagram at Ben Lombard Physiotherapy. Ben, how's it going?
Hi, Minty. Thank you very much for having me on here today. It's an absolute pleasure. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Excited for our very first podcast episode and excited that it's with you because Ben really helped me flesh out the idea for Let's Get Men Talking 2 years ago when we were starting it up. So can you start by telling us a little bit about how you got into physiotherapy?
Yeah, so I studied physiotherapy as an undergraduate degree in Liverpool at university. And the reason why I chose to study physiotherapy is because when I was younger, I had a sports injury myself, playing rugby, turned to the side and was injured on the pitch, had to be taken off and then had to go to hospital because there was a searing pain in my back and my right leg. Scans, nothing conclusive at all. So it was kind of discharged and kind of told to get on with it and told that it would get better. And then I was recommended to see a sports therapist by a family friend. And I went through that week's, maybe a couple of months worth of treatment, different techniques and exercises and manual techniques, acupuncture, electrotherapy, all these weird and wonderful things to happen to a young teenager. And I was mesmerized by his understanding of the human body and what he was able to achieve with me. And kind of through that, I asked him how I could do what he did. And he was the one who suggested that I try physiotherapy.
And so were you quite a sporty kid at that point when you got injured?
Yep, I used to play lots of sports, played for all school teams, you know, cricket, hockey, rugby, played for rugby team outside school. Just loads of sport, as much as I could get my hands on at the time.
And do you remember that injury and having to stop suddenly and also having the kind of anxiety of having an injury that you didn't really know what it was for a long time? Did that impact your mental health at that age?
I thought that was the toughest part, to be honest, because when I was I remember waiting in the emergency room, waiting for, you know, in the A&E, waiting for my scan, having my x-ray, and then being told that there was nothing wrong with me, and just being shocked because it was in searing pain. Every time I put my foot on the floor, I'd get this shot of like electric pain down my right leg. And I thought, you know, I was told that there was nothing that could be done. And I think I might have been 13 or 14, just thinking, crap, you know, I can't walk, I can't run, so it's terrible. I mean, I can't say what effect it had on my mental health because I don't remember, but I can't imagine it was good. You know, not being able to play sport at that age must have weighed heavily on my heart, I'm sure.
Always good to get a swear word in the first episode. Start as you mean to go on. Thanks, Ben. So you now are that physio that you went to, and you help a lot of people who are in the same level of uncertainty and sometimes have tried lots and lots of different things and have had no success, and they come to you, and from what I hear, usually you have a pretty good success rate. So how are you different, and how are you working to sort of change the game for people when it comes to injury rehabilitation and also prevention?
Sorry about swearing. Won't happen again. How am I different? I know that I am quite a holistic practitioner. I have observed others and worked with others, and I'm not saying that they're not holistic, but I have a lot of sort of experience working with complex conditions because of the first part of my career working in a very complex spinal rehab centre in London. And that taught me a great deal about sort of stepping back and being much more objective and much more holistic and treating the patient as a whole rather than focusing on the individual injury. So I think that my assessment approach is, because of that experience, quite detailed and quite effective. And then my other sort of area of expertise, I guess, is more to do with preventing injuries and biomechanics and understanding how biomechanics can be used to your advantage and optimized and teaching an individual how to kind of control that themselves. So my guess, my secondary focus is my ability to teach other people how to use their body and prevent themselves from becoming injured.
That's really interesting. So we are going to talk a little bit about sort of injury and the relationship with mental health throughout this episode. But from experience, when you're in pain or there's something going on and you can't get into a doctor's appointment or whatever it is, and you don't really know where to start, that can be quite an anxiety inducing time. So just for clarification, what is the difference between a physio and an osteo and a chiropractor? And where do you start when you're in pain and don't know where to go?
That's a good question. And it's actually a question that gets asked a lot in this health space or this wellness space. Physios, osteos, chiros, ultimately, you know, the bottom line is that they are a healthcare practitioner who should assess you holistically, try and understand your injury from their perspective, and then try to explain that to you and try to, you know, remedy that through their chosen modality. So it shouldn't matter particularly who you go and see, whether it is an osteopath, a chiropractor, or a physio, because they have all had a certain level of training, and then through their own experience and their sort of patient mileage, as it were, they should all be able to give you a good understanding of what's going on. So in my opinion, it's about finding the person that you gel with the best and who has maybe been recommended to you or who has good reviews, and, you know, just the way that you would shop around for any other thing in your life, you know, do your research, and it shouldn't matter too much who you go and see.
And when I talk to a lot of people through the Let's Get Men Talking Instagram, for example, there is a huge relationship between people being injured and between mental health and anxiety and depression and things like that. You suddenly can't move as much as you would, which is kind of the physical side, but you also feel a bit helpless and lost. So a lot of people wait until they're in a lot of pain to go and see a physio or a doctor or to get help. When should you go and see a physio? Is it when you're in chronic pain?
Well, you shouldn't ever let anything become chronic. So you have different types of pain. You've got acute pain, which is that initial incident of pain. So let's say, you know, you stub your toe and that searing pain straight away is your acute pain. And then chronic pain is something that, you know, technically lasts longer than 6 weeks. So let's say a niggling back injury that's been sort of ongoing for weeks, months, possibly, you know, 6 months, something like that. That's your sort of chronic pain. You shouldn't let yourself get to that chronic discomfort. You shouldn't learn to live with pain. These aren't normal things. You know, it's not normal for the body to be in discomfort. Pain isn't always a sign of tissue damage. So pain isn't something that, you know, should always send a red alert, but it is something that should kind of raise a question mark. And at that point, you should always have that assessed. Another really good time to use a physio or a healthcare professional is preempting something, you know, thinking to yourself, you know, I have this challenge of, say, a marathon coming up next year, and I know that I want to do a training program that's going to last me 24 weeks. Running is something that I have been doing, but not something that I've been doing for a long, long time. Undertaking something of this sort of magnitude is likely to put my body through an inordinate amount of stress. So it would be worth having your movements and your muscles and your body and, you know, your tissues all sort of assessed by a physio or a healthcare practitioner, so we can sort of see where you are in terms of your foundations and how to build the best sort of machine for that.
And in other countries, they seem to kind of go to the physio and their dentist and their dermatologist, mm-hmm. On a sort of yearly basis. Is this something that would improve our physical health, but also the relief around not knowing that something isn't wrong?
I think that that's a very sort of European and actually an American thing to do, to go and, you know, see your healthcare professional on like a regular basis. I'm not saying that's something that people need to do. It always isn't going to do you any harm to go and see someone, have yourself assessed and have things, you know, screened and moved and released and stretched and giving you new exercise ideas. And yes, of course, you're likely to pick up early signs of things if there are sort of aches and pains and stopping them from getting to the level of discomfort.
I read a lot of reports on men's mental health and the psychology surrounding that. And this podcast does address masculinity on a regular basis. Obviously, I hope that it's a podcast that women and men benefit from, whether it's understanding the men in your life or whether it's understanding your friends or yourself a little bit more by having conversations that you can relate to with different people or that you may find useful. that's sort of the point in this podcast. So one of the reports I read recently in preparation for this conversation implied that men are more likely to wait for further along in their pain cycle or their injury cycle before they reach out for help. Is this something that you have seen to be true in your career?
Yeah, definitely. You do tend to see that a lot of guys, and actually a lot of girls too, but I think in my career, definitely more guys take the sort of stiff upper lip approach and kind of grin and bear it, or think they're going to recover by resting it slightly, or kind of ignore it and deny it and still train, and then come to you a little bit further along in the pain cycle that you'd like. Sometimes they let that acute pain cross the border into a chronic pain, which is a little frustrating. But yeah, I do see that quite regularly in clinic.
Why is it frustrating for you if people wait for too late in their pain cycle before they come and see you?
It's frustrating for a couple of reasons. Firstly, obviously they could have sorted it out quicker, so you know, frustrating for them. When something becomes chronic, it hits and it triggers a different sort of pain response. So instead of your chronic pain system, your acute pain system, you start to use your chronic pain system, and that can affect, you know, your body and your mental state. And also your body compensates. So, you know, let's say, for example, you have sprained your ankle and you've refused to go and get help for it. It wouldn't then be uncommon for you to offload the weight from that sprained side to the non-sprained side, overloading the tissues in the knee, the hip, the ankle, which can in turn, you know, the compensation pattern there can tighten up your hip, your knee, ankle, your lower back, and trigger something else to be irritated, which can then slow down your recovery for your ankle sprain when you do go get that checked.
So for anyone who does have the pressure of grin and bear it and you'll get through it, it's actually incredibly frustrating because for them as well, because they could have completely avoided the reciprocal pains that have come from the original injury.
Yeah, you know, you're basically wasting your time. If you imagine it like your injury recovery is a set of goalposts that you're trying to reach, like a finish line, by putting back, you know, by trying to grin and bear it and try to just recover it yourself, sometimes you're pushing that goalpost back. I mean, you're going to reach that recovery at some point, but you're just pushing back the finish line, so it's just taking longer. You know, you save yourself time, effort and money if you sort it out quicker rather than later.
And how is it important for your mental and your physical health that you find help when you notice an injury starting to take place?
Very. I mean, actually just having the conversation and understanding that it's something quite normal or nothing scary can take a load off your mind. And also if you are somebody who uses sport and exercise as a mental health relief or like a stress reliever, or it's a big part of your social calendar, you know, having to take weeks or sessions off of that can be frustrating and, you know, a little bit sad. So if you want to stay fit and healthy and continue doing the sport and exercise that you love in the group and have all that sort of camaraderie and team social aspect, then yeah, for sure, it's best to get it seen and stopping it becoming a real issue.
There's that phrase, healthy body, healthy mind. And obviously you can see how if you are taking regular exercise and, you know, getting plenty of sunlight and those endorphins up, that would have a good impact on your mental well-being. But do you see it the flip side in your clinic where people are injured and that really impacts their emotional well-being or their mental health?
Yeah, totally. And it goes back to, you know, what I just said. If you are someone who uses sport for, you know, your stress relief or your social aspect, and you can't do that, of course it's going to weigh on your mental health and it's going to be an issue. But sport and exercise, again, there's a balance and there's always a scale on these things where you can be doing too much, and that can also have a negative impact on your mental health, not just in terms of, you know, the way that you feel emotionally, but there are lots of elements of exercise that are really good. You know, the endorphins and the benefits for your body itself, the physiological benefits. But if you overtrain and if you are doing too much exercise and you're depleting your body and, you know, you're always sort of chasing that dopamine hit or that serotonin release, you're kind of spiraling into a negative cycle there. So exercise is definitely, there's definitely a spectrum of what is sort of not enough, the right amount. And then certainly it is quite easy to overdo it as well.
It's really interesting, actually, because you and I were watching the Freddie Flintoff documentary quite recently about male body dysmorphia and bulimia, and sort of how even within the industry up until recently, that's been seen as a kind of feminine illness? And do you see sort of, and obviously bulimia being not just being sick, but it can also be binging on exercise as well as food. Do you see a lot of that to be true in your clinic in terms of people over-exercising and becoming injured, or like in men and women?
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. I would still say that it is something that I have seen more in women than men. That might be, you know, societal issues more to blame for that. But certainly men and women both over-exercising to achieve unrealistic and sometimes unattainable body goals, which, you know, stems down to body confidence issues and body dysmorphia, which ultimately have been responsible for injuries. And, you know, there's a big link in things like stress fractures and past eating disorders or disordered eating. Your relationship with food is a complex one for many people, but it will always affect things like your recovery. You know, you need those calories to build tissue, and if you're injured and rebuilding tissue, you need to get that energy from somewhere. There's always, you know, the adage, you know, you need to remember when you're exercising, you're breaking down tissue, when you're resting and you're recovering and you're building tissue. There's definitely something that affects both men and women. I think there's just a lack of education around how important rest, sleep, nutrition actually is, and the benefits towards that in your training.
There's that new wristband, isn't there? Whoop from America. Whoop. Yeah. I think it's WHOOP. And it's like, literally all about recovery and how much you're sleeping and how much, even when you have alcohol, it shows you how much less quickly your body recovers, which is really interesting. You said obviously in your clinic you see it more in women, but that could that partly be because guys are better at covering it up or feel less comfortable talking about it?
Yeah, totally, that could be the case. That's something that might be one of the reasons for sure.
And do you see men in your clinic open up about mental health?
More and more, I see people who are comfortable enough to talk to me about, you know, stresses in their life and, you know, past mental health related concerns. I am always the first person to tell them that, you know, whilst I am a fab listening ear, I am certainly not qualified to be giving any sort of mental health advice. And there are a few professionals that I have who I would signpost towards should something sort of raise any alarm bells in my head. But that is something that I do want to train myself in further, and I'm looking currently out for ways in which to do that.
So I guess healthcare professionals do get some kind of training in it when they're at university, when they're studying, but also you can do additional mental health first aid courses, and that's open to everyone.
Yeah, you get like safeguarding training, and, you know, you're kind of taught through different scenarios where you might experience something, you know, like yellow flags, which might be like psychosocial factors of someone's presentation. But there is definitely not enough training on dealing with mental health related issues as part of the physiotherapy degree in the syllabus, certainly not when I was there. And I'm sure lots of my colleagues would say the same thing, because at university it's quite segregated. You know, there are the physios, there's the osteos, there's the psychologists. Everyone is in their own sort of separate sort of field, and it's quite specific. You know, you learn your syllabus, and you don't learn. There's not as much crossover as you might think. So it is kind of down to us as practitioners to continuously professionally develop. You know, we have to do a certain amount of CPD each year, and I think that actually mental health training, or just sort of awareness and signposting, is probably something that a lot of us should be doing more of.
I can definitely see how it would be beneficial, because do people feel very vulnerable and open when they're in, you know, being treated by you in your clinic?
I hope they wouldn't feel too vulnerable whilst they're there, but it is a vulnerable environment. You know, a lot of the time they're laying, you know, on a treatment bed, head in a hole possibly, you know, and that's quite a vulnerable position. You can't really see what's going on around you. You know, you're looking down at the floor. But yes, certainly you build trust, you build a rapport with somebody. They feel like they can talk to you, and it's quite common that someone will come in and unload on me, is what I would call it. Someone will come in and unload. They'll tell me about, you know, a relationship issue or a work-related issue or something else a little bit more serious, perhaps. And again, the first thing that I will try to do with that is be the listening ear, but tell them that, you know, this is not something that I can help with for sure. But yes, that is, if you ask a lot of physios and healthcare practitioners, we do get unloaded on a lot.
It's really interesting because, you know, me asking you at the beginning, I don't, a lot of people I know don't even know the difference between an osteo and a chiropractor and a physio, let alone the fact that you're in this room and they're helping you with something. And it is hard to sort of refrain. I guess there is no barrier of knowing like what they can and can't help with if you don't really know what they do. So it must be really difficult for clients as well to stop themselves from unloading in that way. You can see why it happens in the UK.
Well, yeah, it's a position of trust. You know, you go to see a healthcare professional and you just get talking, and sometimes this is just how it is. I don't think anybody has the intention of coming to see me for their knee to tell me about their problems at home. So it's not something that is, you know, you're not specifically gearing towards that. But I think you just create an environment where people are comfortable and happy to talk. And sometimes it happens, and sometimes, you know, they unload.
So let's talk a little bit more about injury and mental health and also exercise addiction, because you've trained for a marathon before, which is, you know, going from a non-runner really to training for a marathon, getting injured, coming through that injury. And obviously you've worked alongside people doing the same. And how do you feel that becoming injured when you're training for something or when you're just, you know, really into running affects your mental health?
Well, that question is probably best directed right back at you, because you experienced me when I was injured and not injured training for this marathon, and it's terrible when you are injured and, you know, you've got a goal and your plan says run this today and you're going, oh well, I can't. Well, you know, then you feel like you've let down your plan, or you let down yourself or your coach because you're unable to fulfill that. And that's one thing that weighs on your mental health. You know, you feel less able, and, you know, you feel bad for that. You know, the fact is, again, taking it back to what I said earlier, if running was your stress release because of a hard day at work and you can't because you're injured, that'll affect you that way. You know, if you have old exercise hang-ups or old nutrition hang-ups, and, you know, you use exercise maybe to compensate for, you know, some of the relationship that you have with food, again, being injured with that will only compound the issue. So when I was injured, it was extremely frustrating. I was worried that my family and my partner, you know, coming over to watch me run the marathon in New York, and I wasn't even sure that I'd be able to run. You know, my hip was so sore. But again, I catastrophized the whole situation, and it turned out to really not be much of an issue. But yeah, it really does affect your mental state. You know, I was all over the place. Yeah, definitely, for sure.
And for someone who's injured at the moment, like, how did you deal with that? Or how would you advise people to deal with it?
Yeah, so what you should do is go and see somebody, and they will assess you and tell you the problem and sort you out quickly, which is not what I did. I tried to treat myself, you know, no accountability, lots of frustration, until I decided to go and see someone, and it was remarkably quick, the recovery. But I think the first thing to do is, you know, stop, like, appreciate what's happened, understand that you're injured and that you're not going to be feeling the same as you were yesterday, therefore, you know, your training may change. But, you know, you've just got to look back at what has happened, you know, leading up to that. There's very rarely one specific incident that causes an injury, unless it's, you know, it's a traumatic event. It's usually a repetitive movement pattern or a repetitive motion or action that over time leads to an injury, just like mine was with a muscle in my hip that I was overusing because of an inactivity of a muscle somewhere else down the chain. So compensation pattern went from that acute pain to that chronic pain as I ran through it, leading to the injury. So there are loads of things that you can do when you're injured. There are loads of other types of exercise that won't affect your injury. And there is obviously the exercises that someone like myself would prescribe, which can also give you something to sink your teeth into and give you some mental health relief, because, you know, you won't be able to continue with the training in the same way.
So for those people who are currently injured or have been injured and it really is affecting your mental well-being, do you have any advice on things that they can do instead?
No, yeah, for sure. Go, if you are currently injured, what you do need to do is to take stock, understand that it is frustrating, but there is absolutely nothing better to do than go and get it seen to. Go get it checked, get yourself some exercises prescribed, understand why it's happened or what the cause is, and then, you know, get yourself on that road to recovery sooner rather than later.
Do you find that when people have that diagnosis and the knowledge about how to start on the right road to fixing it, that you see a relief in their kind of emotional well-being at that time?
Almost instantly. Often I will see somebody who has, you know, they'll come in and they'll say, I've got this problem with this, and, you know, we'll go through the assessment and I'll show them what they can do, show them what they can't do, and just reason with them. You know, I'll say to them, you know, you were able to do this, therefore it's not this. You're able to do this and you're unable to do this, therefore the injury is coming because of this. And, you know, when you tell them this in quite basic body language, you know, you show them what they can do and show them what's causing their discomfort by maybe replicating it throughout a movement and showing them that the movement, if you optimize it or change it slightly, can, you know, be pain-free. This, you can almost see the sigh and just moment of relief, that penny sort of dropping, where like a weight is almost just being like taken off their shoulders, and they just, you know, a lot of time they'll just smile and be like, thank goodness, or I'm so glad you said that, or I'm so glad it wasn't something like this, you know. And that's really important, I think.
I think the reoccurring message in here is that if you are injured or in pain, man or woman, it's not abnormal for that to affect your mental health or your mood. And some people don't know what mental health will look like, that, you know, they think if they don't have depression or anxiety or, you know, a really obvious symptom, they don't have mental health. They don't have a mental illness. But emotional intelligence is a big part of that as well, and emotional well-being and your happiness. And you can, pain can really creep in, and you can really forget how it's affecting you until it's been treated. And then you look back and you say, I will never let that happen to me again. So if you are in pain and you are feeling sad, that is not abnormal. And you have to find the right, not just a physio, but the right healthcare professional.
Yeah.
For you, who you trust and you enjoy working alongside, and you respect their opinion to the point where you'll do what they say.
Yeah, that's completely, completely right. And I just want to back up what you are saying. It is so, so normal to feel frustrated and angry and upset, or to make, you know, to feel bad about yourself when you are unable to exercise or when you can't exercise because of an injury. It's so, so, so normal. But, you know, that's not a reason to kind of put your tools down and just like stop and give up. That should be your motivating factor to really kickstart that rehab journey, or that journey to recovery.
Let's go back to exercise addiction or taking it too far, because you trained for a marathon and this was your first training session. And if you do this without sort of direct instructions from someone else, you've got to at some point get overexcited and overdo it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, to be honest, I wasn't much of a runner. I'd run a few half marathons, and, you know, not because of any running technique, but just because I'm relatively fit and sporty, I'm an okay runner. So I, having, you know, been a physio alongside many, many people's marathon journeys, took it upon myself to do my own plan and do my own training, which in hindsight, you know, I should have just outsourced that to somebody else, because it would have been, you know, much more effective to have an objective person doing it. But yeah, I got overexcited. I could see the minutes falling off my running speed as I was getting better at it. And I could, you know, I could run around the roots, and I would, you know, feel that sort of endorphin rush as I was getting faster and faster. And then until it was too late, I was running too frequently, too fast for my own sort of natural speed. And then, yeah, the overuse injury.
So obviously reiterating the point that you are not a psychologist, you are a physio, but you have experience in being sporty and running and working alongside a lot of a real variety of people with a real variety of injury caused by a variety of things. I'm just interested to hear your view and your opinion on how can you recognize when you're taking it too far with exercise, and how do you go about starting to pull yourself back from that? Because it can't be black and white. It's got to be different for everyone.
Yeah, I think there's lots of different things that people can use. And again, it's all down to personal opinion, But, you know, if you are choosing to exercise on your day after day after day, like not prioritizing rest, you know, you're going to bed late, getting up early, you know, it's kind of, you have to look at your pattern of exercise and, you know, the reason to why you're exercising and the type of exercise. Are you doing the same thing over and over again? Is there any variety in your exercise type? And actually, how do you feel whilst you're exercising? Are you waking up exhausted and just pushing yourself through it? Or are you waking up refreshed, ready and raring to go? And one thing that I have picked up in the past is something that they use in American football. You know, they do a sort of grip strength test to test how sort of overtrained and over fatigued you are. So they get their players to sort of squeeze, I think it's like a standing scale, so if you were to stand on it, it would tell you your body weight, and they try to the players to squeeze that with both hands to see how much force they can produce, or they use like a grip strength trainer, like a dynamometer, but like a basic way we do it with a scale. And they, if you're and it's not about how strong you are, but it's about how strong you are relative to your normal. So let's say that you squeeze 15 kilograms out regularly, and then, you know, you're starting to drop and you're getting down towards 10, 11. You can see that, you know, you're not recovering from that exercise. And a basic way that everyday people like you and I can implement that is either using your kitchen scale, or most of us carry a watch on our wrist now that measures our heart rate. And you can look at your resting heart rate. And, you know, if your resting heart rate is creeping up, it means that your body is working harder and you're not recovering. So it's really important to look at your data that you have around you to kind of keep check with yourself.
Do you recommend fitness trackers as something that even for people who aren't that into exercise, and like you can count your steps and stuff?
There is a definite positive and a definite negative to these things. Fitness trackers are great because, yes, they tell you, they give you all this information, right? So and then it depends on what you do with this information. So yes, you know how many steps you've done, you know maybe how many calories you've burnt roughly, because they are all wildly inaccurate. Most of them, I would say, are probably a good like 25 to 15% overestimating. So I don't think that they should really necessarily be used for counting your calories as such, but they are a good sort of indicator. And again, it's all relative, so you can kind of, as long as you take that with a pinch of salt. But I think they are great for sort of encouraging you to exercise more. But if you have a personality, or a, you know, if you're likely to overdo exercise, or if you have done so in the past, having something on your wrist that tells you how many calories you're burning or how many steps you've done can make people overdo it, and therefore can like become quite a negative strain and like an unnecessary strain on people's mental health, I think.
So if you're not that into exercise, it can be a great way to sort of like gamify and track your steps and make sure that you're hitting 10,000 steps a day, which is kind of a foundation of, you know, like 5 days a week,
yep.
Quite a good place to start if you don't. That's something that you've told me in the past. Yeah. I'm not trying to give anyone well-being advice here. But yeah, that's really interesting. And I mean, on the flip side of it, what do you do for your, what makes you happy? What do you do for your mental well-being in terms of whether it is exercise or hobbies and stuff like that?
Having good people around you is obviously really important for your mental health. You know, I get to talk to you. I get to talk to, you know, I'm very close with my brother who lives very close, and friends. You know, I can have a good connection with friends I can talk to should I need to. But yeah, I am the same as a lot of people. Exercise is a big stress reliever for me, and it does occasionally err on the side of over exercising, and there is therefore negative effects of that. But I love a good movie, I love a good film, and I'm quite good with sort of zoning out and listening to music and podcasts too. They're sort of how I decompress.
Because you work from home now, right? And that is an adjustment. So having that line between working from home and the office and home environment must be quite important now.
Well, actually, I've worked from home since March 2019. So maybe just about a year before the pandemic started. So for me, my life hasn't really changed in terms of how I work, which is an advantage to me because I'm used to it. So I'm used to being in the four walls of my, you know, I live at work now rather than working from home. And I have developed some pretty good routines. You know, I'm pretty good at going for a walk in the morning. I will try to do some form of exercise, you know, maybe 4-5 times a week. And I'm pretty good with breaks. You know, I plan my day. So I always keep half an hour between appointments, you know, for hygiene reasons, but also just because sometimes I just need to stand outside and get some sunshine on my face.
Since the sort of rise in people working from home, have you seen an increase in people having injuries or different types of injuries?
Loads. Yeah. The more people work from home without a really good ergonomic setup, the more overuse, repetitive strain, static postural injury that I see. You know, people, the common one is someone working, like, you know, let's imagine that you live in a house of four randomers and you're all working from the kitchen at the moment, but then you will have phone calls that you need to make. So, you know, you go to your bedroom to do that. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're stuck on a list of four or five phone calls from your bedroom because everyone else is working in the kitchen. So you're sitting on your bed with your laptop on your knees, phone by your head, under your neck, or headset on, whatever. And, you know, all of a sudden now you're hunched in, basically in the fetal position, sitting with your laptop on your knees, staring down, bending your neck. And it's a classic. I'm seeing people with neck injuries, shoulder injuries, lower back injuries, hamstring, knees, just because they're just so static and in positions which are just not favourable for the body at all.
But if, like me, you're 30, surely that's normal. Just kidding. A lot of people do think that though, right?
Yeah, that is terrible. You know, someone who comes to you and they're like, oh yeah, my back's sore, but you know, I am 30, so it's pretty normal. It's like, who has told you that? Where has that come from? It's awful. Yeah, absolutely. There's no need for somebody to be in pain. I mean, we can all have pain-free lives if we are much more aware of how our bodies are meant to work and how they're not meant to work. I think that's the key. Knowing what something shouldn't feel like is something that you're not taught. You know, knowing that when you squat or lunge, it shouldn't hurt your knees or your back. You know, that's not a sign that it's working. You know, you should feel the muscles engaged, that developing that mind-muscle connection and, you know, being able to control the movement patterns is something that is incredibly important and not taught and to anyone, really.
Well, I guess I flinched and said, just kidding, very quickly, because I saw Ben's face when I made that joke. You just try wearing a backpack with one arm in front of him. But yeah, I mean, it is really interesting. And a lot of people think that a lot of people do think that getting to 30 does mean that you are a bit, it's normal to be a bit achy. Do you recommend that people get taught how, you know, we don't even like stand often properly or breathe properly. And there are loads of people who are now like breath coaches. You've got Jamie Clements, who also has a men's mental health podcast called Man Down, is also a breath coach. And you see, you know, people hunching when they're sitting or standing. And, you know, if we're not even doing that right, how can we expect to squat right and do like quite big movements like lunges? Where do we go to learn that?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, a benefit of going to see a physio or a PT or an osteo or a chiropractor. You know, they should all be able to help you with those movement patterns because they're all very functional, normal movement patterns. And if you are somebody who wasn't into sport as a child or not as an adult and you're new to picking it up and you've been used to sitting in a chair for years and years and years and you've adapted to that position, you know, why would you expect to be able to do that? You know, you only have to look at a very small child, like, you know, my niece is 3 years old and she can sit in a squat with her bum centimetres off the floor, playing with toys in front of her for 45 minutes plus without even flinching, you know. And if you were just trying to do that now, you would end up on your backside in seconds because it would be super fatiguing and it would just be super uncomfortable if you could even get into that position. So, you know, you do sort of have to use it or lose it. And yeah, you go see an exercise professional and they can help you regain that. And then you can continue to use it and not lose it.
So you can bring it back. And, you know, anyone, as long as they don't have a big injury that they're unaware of, like really, you know, you can get into running at any age, at any size, at any shape, at any, you know, or just movement or walking. Or
there are caveats to that, of course. You know, if you have a specific injury or health condition that prevents you from doing such intense exercise, for sure. But I'm a firm believer that there is a scalable option, a progression and a regression of every exercise that can be implemented to improve someone's physical well-being, for sure. You know, there is, if you can't walk, you know, if you can walk, you can probably jog, and if you can jog, you probably run. And, you know, there are always going to be you know, using a mix of varied exercise techniques and intensities and strengthening exercises and stretches, all kind of forming towards a common goal. You know, if you imagine as a pyramid, you know, your top being your goal, it's every single thing underneath that that kind of counts towards it. It's not just the strength, it's not just the running, it's the nutrition, the sleep, the hydration, the mobility exercises, all the other accessory exercises, the whole picture, that holistic picture, which goes back to, you know, how do I think that I am different to other people, or, you know, something that I'm proud of that I use in my therapy is that I am very holistic and I'm good at taking that step back and helping other people realize what's underneath the peak of the pyramid and what the steps and what the other pieces of the puzzle are in order to produce the best outcome.
So before I let you go, I've got two questions. One is, do you believe in healthy body, healthy mind, or the mind-body connection? And the other is, do you have any kind of recommendations of people that we can follow on social media, or, you know, book sort of thing from YouTube that you recommend people take a look at?
Okay, so let me the first question, which was healthy body, healthy mind. I think I believe that. Healthy body, healthy mind, if you are feeling good, you know, you're releasing endorphins and, you know, you're feeling yourself when you're eating well, and you make good life choices, good habits, good exercise routines. And as long as you are maintaining a good balance of exercise, rest and good nutrition, sleep and hydration, I do believe in that. The mind muscle connection is what I believe you mentioned. I'm a big believer in the mind muscle connection. I'm a big believer of using and thinking about engaging the correct muscle when you are performing an exercise. I believe that it not only enhances your performance, but it will just enhance everything about the exercise. It makes it feel so much better and more correct as well. And then the second question is, do I have any recommendations of people to have a look at?
Or resources
and books? YouTube's a really big one for me. There's usually there's really good videos all over YouTube. The prehab guys are really good. Tom Goom is a really interesting running physiotherapist. There's some really good podcasts on Spotify. Adam Meekins has a pretty cool podcast. He's a little bit colourful with his language, though, so if you're sensitive to that, be forewarned. But there's loads of really cool resources out there. And, you know, there's even amazing books like Ross Edgley's book, The World's Fittest Book, and the sequel to that, which is pretty amazing. And then there's James Clear's book. So, yeah, there's loads. Almost too many, but if... I couldn't just pick one. There's too many.
Maybe you can put a reading list on your blog, and when people visit your website, they can have a look.
Yeah, I think I'll have to. I need to consider this more before I come up with a definitive list.
That's absolutely fine. Definitely put you on the spot with that one. Ben, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. And it's been very enlightening. Even though we've had some similar discussions before, I feel like I've learned a lot as well. And I hope everyone listening has too. If you want to find Ben after listening to this episode, his website is benlombardphysiotherapy.com and his Instagram is @benlombardphysiotherapy. You can also find him on LinkedIn. I believe that you have just got mildly into tweeting, but probably don't know your handle.
Work in progress.
Hashtag work in progress. Watch this space. But yeah, you can find him on his website and all his social media links are there, and a little bit more about what he does on a day-to-day basis. Ben, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an absolute pleasure and an honour, really, to be your first guest on here. And I hope I am a good opener for a good warm-up act, I should say, for the rest that you have to come, because I know you have some amazing people lined up and you're going to have some amazing conversations. I can't wait to listen to them, and I can't encourage other people enough to listen to them, because there will be some absolutely banging top tips, I'm sure.